listening to Sam in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Tuesday, August 13, and we're getting right along this week. I can't talk this morning. I don't know what's going on. I've been kind of distracted by the earthquakes around here. We've had a couple the last few days. And, you know, although in California we don't really get excited about it, it's sort of like, you know, another one. But you never know. You never know, you know. So I'm getting kind of paranoid, but that's part of it. You know, I mean, you know, everywhere you go in this country, there's either hurricanes, tornadoes, it's too hot, it's too cold, pandemics, you know, AI, all these things that are threatening our lives. And I'm like, how do we even get along? You know, I mean, I don't know, you know, it's, but you know what? Let's get positive this morning. I don't know why I'm going that there, but, I have very lovely guests in the studio today, two of them. And let me just bring up my notes here. And, of course, we have Ben and Amelia. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having us, Sam.
Of course. Thank you for joining me. So it's Ben Verrill and Amelia Rowcroft.
That's correct.
Am I saying it correctly?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Awesome. And you guys are from the UK, I imagine?
Yes.
We are, yeah. We flew over... gosh, last Thursday, and we're still getting over the jet lag, I have to say.
Yeah, huh?
Yeah.
I know, the jet lag is pretty, I know. And you guys are here for the Holly Shorts, right?
The most amazing Holly Shorts Festival. Yeah,
really?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Is it good this year?
It's been phenomenal.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, we are loving
it. Very nice. So you guys have made a film, and we'll talk about it at length, of course. So you flew in only a few days ago, right?
That's right, yeah.
And where in the UK do you guys live?
We live in a small town called Lewes, which is near Brighton on the south coast.
Okay. Is that close to London? I don't know.
It's about an hour away by train.
Okay.
I mean,
that's
England's
not too bad, but it's not London, right?
Yeah.
But I know. I've heard of Brighton, though, you know. Where did I hear? Oh, in an Elton John song, right? That song from Tommy, the Pinball Wizard.
Yeah, that's
says,
right.
You know, he mentioned Brighton there.
Yeah.
And that's how I've ever heard of it before, you know. But, yeah. Now, are you guys family or are you separate?
Okay, this is an exclusive.
Okay.
Yeah, we're married.
You are married. Okay. That's why I was asking, you know.
We've been keeping that secret, you know, from everybody else at the festival. So you get to hear it first on LA Talk Radio.
Sounds good. Let me just bring up your mic a little bit. That's... yeah, well, that's what I suspected, but, you know, different last names and stuff. Plus, I assume nothing, you know. And so you got to ask, you know. How long have you guys been married now?
Oh, I think 11 years.
Wow, that's pretty long.
You get less for murder.
That's true. any offspring, any children at all?
No, just a very needy dog who
we're, oh, yeah?
Yeah, getting daily updates from home on his progress.
He's okay.
Coping.
So you guys are more into the career and everything like that? Or
it just didn't happen for us, to be perfectly honest. But
didn't get a chance.
Been too busy.
11 years. Okay, well, we'll take it at face value, you know. Awesome. And so in England... The main thing you guys do is make movies?
Kinda. I run a media agency called Toffee Hammer.
Uh-huh.
And we do a lot of corporate work and so on, media work, animation and so on. Filmmaking's my passion, so any profits of the company get put into doing crazy filmmaking that doesn't make any money. And a media's day job is as a sculptor.
Yeah, my story.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm a little bit different. I've always worked in the movies, but as a sculptor. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's my
I saw that in the notes. Now, so you create sculptures for movies?
Yeah, so that's how my career started out. But actually,
right. For
the last few years, I've been making waxworks. So I worked at Madame Tussauds for many years.
Right.
And now I actually sculpt all the heads for Hollywood Wax Museum on Hollywood Boulevard.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I have never visited the museum before this trip.
Well,
so
now you get a chance.
Yeah,
then.
So I've finally
seen
them.
So
you've
only seen the heads before.
I've only seen them in clay, literally. And then I just went around the whole museum. It's like, oh my God, this is like everything I've been doing the last sort of 10 years.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Awesome. So how do they use sculptures in movies? You mean like in the background and things
yes.
like that?
So it's mainly like on the really big budget movies. A lot of those do come right. to the UK because we have so many good artists. So right. we get a lot of those kind of, you know, things like, Ryan's gone blank.
Harry Potter, for instance.
Oh, really?
So
I worked on Harry Potter, Tomb Raider, all those ones, like wherever uh-huh. you've got like big statues
right.
or, you know, big sets, like anywhere where there's caves or rocks, like
right.
all that's got to
like
be carved
ancient
by
things or
yeah, ancient things.
Where you go look for yeah. treasures.
Tombs.
Exactly, yeah.
yeah,
yeah.
Wow. Very
yeah, all
cool.
that kind of stuff.
How did you get into that?
I just studied sculpture at college. I actually did a course on sculpting for film. Like,
right.
That was my degree. And we have, you know, a really strong art department like that in the UK.
I see.
So I went straight
So from the beginning, you did it with film in mind?
Yeah, totally. So my first big movie was Sleepy Hollow I worked on.
Uh-huh.
And then I just worked on loads of movies for ages. And then I just specialised in just doing people. So that's my thing. Like whenever someone needs to get like a good likeness of someone,
uh-huh.
then that's my vibe.
That's awesome. So like you're a modern Michelangelo or something, right?
You know, I like to think so.
Why not? You know, I mean, not many people sculpt things, and especially for film, right?
Well,
I mean,
it's a very small world. It's a very
yeah.
small pool.
I mean, obviously,
of people
it's a clear profession and everything, but
yeah.
But you know, like I never heard of sculpting for a movie. But you're right. I mean, somebody has to do all that, right?
Yeah, sure. And then you've got all the creatures side of things as well. Like it's a crossover with, you know. So I would work in construction, like doing all the bigger stuff.
Uh-huh.
But then a lot of, you know, my friends work in creature as well, where you do all the prosthetic makeups and the monsters and all that side of things.
Oh.
Like, it's all sculpting.
Yeah. Very nice. Very nice. And so, did you go to college too?
I did. I went to film school in the UK.
So you knew you wanted to get into film.
I wanted to get into film from like when I was about 6 years old.
Really?
I mean, yeah. I can tell you my first experience of the cinema was E.T.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I was 6 years old, and mm-hmm. It's a famous story in my family.
Okay.
Because I was probably a bit too young for it.
Uh huh.
And if you know E.T., there's a bit where it looks like E.T.'s died. He's in the,
right.
in the river and he's all uh-huh. white.
And the light is fading and everything.
Yeah.
Right?
And I could not cope with that. Right?
Really?
So I started bawling my eyes out and I had to be taken out of the cinema. And I was probably about 12 years old when I realized that E.T. actually survived and went home. So, you know, it traumatized me.
Yes.
But at the same time, you know, it proved to me the power of cinema, right? I mean, that's the thing that's so exciting about.
Right.
The big screen, and that's what's so brilliant about being at Holly Shorts, because we get to see our movie on one of the biggest screens in the world. I mean, at the Chinese Theatre.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see it on
sure,
that screen.
Sure, and we'll talk about it. I'd just like to find out
a
little bit more about the guests and everything, so we know who we're talking to.
Absolutely,
you know?
Yeah.
So did you grow up in Brighton, or...?
I actually grew up in Hastings, which is a seaside town on the south coast. Some people know it from 1066, the Battle of Hastings, but, you know, that's big in our history.
I've heard of it, yeah, but I wouldn't be able to find it on the map or anything.
No, exactly. Yeah, more people have heard of it than know where it is. I think that's true.
And what kind of child? Did you have a good childhood? I mean,
yeah.
Do you have siblings and stuff?
Yeah, so I've got three siblings, two sisters and a brother.
Uh-huh.
And in different ways, we're all into entertainment. So
really?
my sister Sally's
family.
My dad was really into acting at an amateur level.
Oh, really?
So we all got to perform in different ways. I have to say, I'm the least good actor in the family, which is why I went the other side of things. I worked out that, you know, there's no point in competing when, you know, your brother and your sister are superb actors, and I used to go on stage and just be myself, which is, you know.
Yeah, I know, that's why I know I can never act, because I can only do myself,
yeah,
you know.
Exactly.
I guess that's why you go to school to learn, you know, and stuff, but some people have it naturally, you know, and so I get what you're saying. So you get more interested behind the scenes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I, you know, it's a fun thing because you I mean, I like working with people like you, right? Mm-hmm. We were talking about that before we went on air. You know, there's something magical about being with a group of people all creating something, whatever
that is. That's
true. And, you know, that's where I get my energy. That's what I feed off.
Right.
I don't get to do it as much as I'd like. Yeah. You know, most of filmmaking is actually in pre-production and post-production where you're working with a small number of people.
Right.
But there's nothing better in life, I think, than turning up on a location, getting a whole bunch of people basically to pretend with you. I mean, it's the same thing that I used to do when I was 10, when I was pretending to make movies.
Right.
But now I'm doing it with adults who sort of play along with me, which is great.
Wow, that's amazing. So you have a media company, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's
okay,
right.
Okay, what do you do there?
So it's a small media company. I've got three colleagues, Kate, Lily, and Ruth. Mm-hmm. And we work with various different clients, mainly to produce their internal communications. So still making movies, but making movies for a very, very specific audience.
Right.
So they don't get to see the light of day.
Yeah.
But it's fun because we enjoy the process.
Yeah,
you know, if you love what you do, it's about loving the doing. Necessarily the product at the end of it, always.
Right,
you know?
Then it's yours, you know. I mean, when it's your business, it's different rather than working for someone else, you know.
Oh, it's totally different.
And so, Amelia, what about you? Where did you grow up?
So I also grew up on the South Coast. We actually grew up quite near each other.
Oh, but, really?
We didn't know each other as children.
We didn't know each other at the time.
But I actually went to school with a relative of Ben's.
Really?
Yeah.
What a small world.
We had kind of parallel lives. But,
yeah.
And then we both lived in London for many years. But then we both met when we moved back near where we're from. So.
Oh,
really?
Yeah. Oh, so you both moved to London at a certain point in your life? What was the reason you moved to London?
Basically, I went to art school in London, and then obviously working on films, like all the film studios are dotted around London, so it's a very long commute from the South Coast. I did it for a few years, and then I was like, I cannot do this anymore.
Yeah. So, I guess the same reason that people move to Hollywood, and a lot of people move to LA, because this is where the action is.
Totally.
Right.
You've got everything in a really, you know, condensed place. But in London, it's very spread out. And, you know, if you want to live somewhere other than actual London, then, you know, you've got a big old drive every day on your hands.
Now, were you interested in art early on in your life?
Yeah, so I've always been obsessed with art, you know. So, as I say, the degree that I did was actually called technical arts interpretation, but it was just all about making things for film. So some people got into animation, some people got into making props, some people went into creatures. It's just like you've just found your thing that you were really into.
Right.
And for me, like, as soon as I started sculpting people, I was like, this is it, this is my thing.
Really?
I just love it.
Wow.
Yes.
And it takes a lot of work, right?
Yeah, it is. Just 99% practice, honestly.
Right.
And actually, Ben and I together, we've made a series of online courses on how to sculpt people.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're quite popular, actually, with people in the film industry. So, yeah, it's called Sculpting Masterclass, if anyone's interested.
Yeah.
And, they've been we've been really pleased with the feedback from them.
In fact, Amelia was recognised on the red carpet at Holly Shorts, not for our film, but for her online course. Yeah, that was amazing.
Very surreal moment.
One of the actors in it's actually a brilliant film. One of the actors in a short film called Dr. No Means No. He plays James Brand, like a James Bond character.
Uh-huh.
So really handsome, you know, LA actor.
Right.
And he approaches Amelia and says, "Are you Amelia Rowcroft?" I mean, it was just brilliant. And he's actually a phenomenal sculptor as well, we found out afterwards. But
really nice guy. So very shocking.
Now it must be pretty difficult though to sculpt someone and have the exact same faces in real life, right?
Yeah, that it is basically the hardest thing to achieve in sculpting.
Right. It's not if they tell you sculpt a gargoyle or something, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's much easier.
Exactly, because you have freedom.
Go with it.
the freedom to imagine it. But when it's people, specific people, you have to be exact, right?
Yeah, especially if you don't get to meet them. Because obviously in the past I have met a lot of the celebrities that I've sculpted. But now that I live, like, because where we live is very remote. And the work that I do entirely from photos that I find online. So it's all about just finding those really good photos to work from and using that reference in the best way.
And you have to create it in 3D, obviously, where pictures are flat.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, so you've got no that sort of measurements.
A lot of talent, a lot of skill. I mean, wow, you know, I can't imagine how difficult it must be.
It is difficult, but, you know, as I say, a lot of it is practice and just learning the right technique to do it.
I see. And you work with clay mostly?
So I work in what we call water-based clay. So that's kind of like pottery clay, what people make, you know, pottery cups and pots and plates and things out of. Okay. A lot of sculptors use an oil-based clay, like the creature sculptors and people, because then you can get all the little wrinkles and skin pores and stuff like that. But for wax, because the work that I do is cast in wax, you don't need that level of, you know, really tight surface. So,
So you do it in wax as well?
No, so I make a sculpture in clay, and then a mold is made of that.
Oh, okay.
And then so you've got a negative, and then out of the negative you pour the wax in, and you have like a hollow, like if you imagine like an Easter egg, it's kind of like that. So you swirl the mold with layers and layers of wax, and then you have like a wax shell.
Right.
And then obviously they have to put the eyes in, the teeth in,
right,
punch all the hair in one by one. It's a really laborious process.
It must be, yeah.
But I just do the sculpting.
But you can't really sculpt in wax, right?
You can sculpt in wax.
Can you?
But
from scratch?
You can, but like for a wax work, it wouldn't be practical because it has to be hollow so that you can get your hands inside to do the eyes and the teeth and stuff. So,
right.
You wouldn't want it to be solid.
Wow, that's very interesting. I'd love to watch you work, you know, and do this stuff. I mean, it's like, it's amazing,
it's
you know?
It's fascinating. I mean, you know, we both are in the business of people.
Right.
So the... You know, and that's why we get on so well, because what Amelia does is create sculptures. And what's amazing about her sculptures, she sculpted me a few times.
Is he loves being sculpted.
I'm sure.
Do you need to sculpt me again? I've aged a few years since the last one.
the thing that you know, makes a sculpture come to life is when you get to see the person come alive, right?
Right.
It's not, it can't look... Like it's, you can get an accurate likeness of somebody. This is what, but to bring it alive, there's something magic that happens.
Oh, wow.
And I love filming the sculpture process as well.
Yeah.
There's something beautiful. So, if you don't mind me saying, Amelia, like the way that she works, a lot of people think that sculptors, I thought this too, that you're carving.
That's what I was thinking, like marble and things like that, right?
But Amelia builds up from the inside out. And that's fascinating. So you start with, you literally just start with a wire armature, and then you add clay. And it's such a beautiful process. So I film it all the time. Mm. There's a moment where it goes from being basically, it kind of, you know who the person is, right?
Yeah.
Because everything's there, the eyes and the nose and the mouth, everything's in proportion.
Uh-huh.
But then there's just this moment where she punches in the eyes or smooths out the skin with a bit of water. And it's so cinematic, right? Because it suddenly, it pops. Suddenly, there's a person in clay. So it's funny because there is a real crossover of what we do, because I think that what we both strive for is sharing something about what it is to be human.
Yeah.
Right? So either doing that in sculpture or doing that in film. And you wouldn't think that there is that much of a crossover, but most of our conversations about art are just about how can we convey the humanity of this person to somebody else so that there's a real empathy that's created.
Right. So as far as this film, you're the director. Did you direct it as well?
No, so I was involved in the writing process, but then I was producing on this one.
I see, okay. And what does that entail, producing a movie? Is that pretty much like you oversee everything? Because I know the director is responsible for a lot of things. But is the producer like Above the director?
No, very much so not. I mean, as I say, it's not my actual expertise producing, right. But yeah, we were just organising everything, you know. Okay. It was a fairly small, short shoot, but we obviously had to put everyone up, you know, organise where everyone was at different times of day, organise where to eat, all the practical stuff. Like, so that's what...
And I think the other thing with that, so Amelia's one of the producers, so there's Ruth Marshall and Kate Oster, who are also co-producers and co-writers.
Okay.
And how we work, I mean, we're a small team, okay? Mm-hmm. So it was about this time last year, I said, right, we've got a little pool of money.
Right.
Let's make a film, right? Literally, it was like that. And because we work so well together and we know the types of things that we like.
Right.
I was saying last night at a mixer, it sort of emerged, this film. It didn't really, you know, it happened organically in a really lovely way. So we wrote together, originally I sort of wrote a structure for the film. And then we went to Hastings and visited all of the locations together.
Right.
And just sort of lived the life of the characters for a day,
right.
Which is, you know, the film takes place over the course of a day. So, and it's a film about friendship and we're all good friends. So there's something, you know, what we strive to do with this film is create a film about friendship.
Right.
And specifically those friendships that last, you know, the people that you meet when you're young.
Right.
Stay with you forever. They're your soul friends.
That's true.
So the plot is basically these two characters, Joe and Catherine, played by Harry Michelle and Maddie Rice. They meet in Hastings for a day, having not spoken to each other for 15 years, not been in touch for 15 years.
Right. And how old are they now? In the
They're in sort of early 30s.
Early 30s?
Yeah.
Okay.
So they, over the course of the day, they... As you do, right? You know, it's awkward. You meet someone for the first time after 15 years, it's an awkward reunion.
That's true.
But what you see over the course of the day is them gradually regressing back to how they were together when they were teenagers.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, we were so lucky with Harry and Maddie. I mean, these guys, you know, I have to say this every interview, right? But these guys make the film. It's an actor's film. Mm. And if Harry and Maddie aren't superstars, you know, in the next 10 years, then there's something wrong with this industry. They are so phenomenally good at just delivering naturalistic dialogue in a way that even I get goose pimples, right, talking about it, because I've seen the film, like, you know, 40, 50 times, right? You know, like, I should be bored of it by now, but every single time I get drawn in, and it's not to do with Iowa craft, it's not to do with the writing, it's just to do with their performances. Mm. Like, their performances are magical.
Right. How did you meet them? How did you...
So we put out a casting call.
By the way, the film is called Shouting at the Sea. No, we didn't introduce it because you segued right into the film, but Shouting at the Sea... And how long is the film?
It's 20 minutes long.
20 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay. And short films, I understand, are up to 40 minutes, right?
They can be. I mean, I think there's no specific definition. We disqualified ourselves from some film festivals which want them to be up to 15 minutes.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And I think that, you know, interesting thing about short film as an art form, I think that so often, you know, the best thing about a short film, right, is that you're not trying to hit a 90-minute target.
Right.
So it's a bit like a speed limit, I suppose. You know, like when I was learning to drive, my driving instructor said, you know, remember it's a limit, not a target.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you're going at 70 miles per hour, right, or over that, it's, you know, you're not trying to get to 70 miles per hour. It's a limit.
Right.
And I think that when you make a short film, what you should be doing is limiting the amount of time for the story,
right.
And it should be a great gift, right?
Right?
Because we cut stuff, right? I mean, it could have been like 27 minutes long.
That's true.
But if you're strict about it, you can make it as long as short as you like, as long as the story is served,
right? And I would imagine it's probably more difficult than a feature because you have to put the whole story together in much shorter time. So it's not like you have a lot of time to develop.
No.
Yeah, it's true. It's a challenge
right?
to it's a kind of condensed.
Right. But it's film, kind of, it? I'd say that I think, you know, there are short films and there are short films. Some people make a short film as a proof of concept for a feature film. Okay. And they can work really well because what they tend to do is focus in on a few scenes, give it a bit of a taster. I think a mistake I've made earlier in my career was sort of imagining that a short film was like a short feature and trying to pack in too much.
I see.
Whereas I like to think that, you know, a good short film, if it's a good comedy, mm-hmm. for example, then it has the sort of structure of a joke. So it you're leading up to a punchline. Okay. Our film, I think, has more like the structure of a poem.
Oh.
So it's, and it has some beautiful poetic lines as voiceover. The sea has a voice, and we're very privileged to have a fantastic actress called Daisy Haggard to do the voiceover for us. He's got
The sea voice. Actually talks in the film.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah,
so the sea, like, narrates the story?
Well, it's more like the sea. So we like to say the sea's an indifferent voiceover.
Okay.
So one of the themes of the movie is that no matter how sort of dramatic and big an event in our lives seems to us, actually, the world doesn't care, right?
The world keeps turning, the sea keeps coming in and out.
That's true.
That's exactly.
We're just ants, really.
We are just ants. And we're here for such a short amount of time. So the sea's been here, you know, forever.
Right.
So we didn't want her to, I'm saying her, the sea. We didn't want the sea to sort of tell us what was happening, but more just sort of reflect on the nature of friendship, on the nature of love, and so on. So there's a bit of voiceover. I can't quote it directly, but it reflects the coming and going of the sea. So
Right. It's
the idea that, you know, these two people are forever connected, but also forever apart,
Right. Just
in the same way that the sea comes and touches the shore, but then moves away again.
Yeah.
So
it's a complex thing. I mean, it's pretty creative, you know, to think about all these things and stuff, because it's not things we think about every day, you know, giving a personality to the sea
yeah.
and things like that, you know. How did that come about? How did you think it up?
I mean, I will say that the writing process on this has been such a lovely process.
Mm.
In the past, I've written stuff on my own.
I see.
And, you know, I like to think I'm quite a good writer.
Uh-huh.
My writing's probably been spoiled a bit over the years because I've had to do lots of corporate dramas and so on.
Right.
With this, it was really born out of conversation, and I had the structure, but being able to talk to my lovely friends and colleagues about what it's like, because we all grew up in seaside towns, right? So
Okay. So
we were able to talk about what it was like to be teenagers and
Right. The
friends we knew and the sort of important or seemingly important emotions we had when we were teenagers. And Ruth, for example, had grown up in a seaside town and was returning to a seaside town, which is similar to one of the characters. Kate now lives in London, but had been brought up in a seaside town. We
Right. Are
both don't live by seaside towns, but grew up
Right. Seaside
towns. And there's something about the UK. I mean, I don't know what it's like here. And in the UK, seaside towns themselves have a character.
Okay.
They tended to be very popular, rich resorts in the Victorian era.
Okay.
And they gradually declined and declined and declined. So you have this amazing architecture, amazing, like, sort of grand buildings, beautiful old music halls. Like, in Hastings, for example, there's this beautiful building, absolutely beautiful building,
Right.
Which was the old music hall. And now it's the deluxe arcade machines. Right? And so you've got this sort of garish sort of lighting that says, you know, in Hastings we call it the Deluxe as well. I don't know why, but it is the Deluxe arcade machine. So you have this sort of real contrast between Victorian grandeur and kind of like cheap thrills of the seaside town.
Right.
And also, you know, we have seasons. They're very seasonal.
Right.
So when people say, I'm from Hastings,
Right.
if I say to someone, I'm from Hastings, quite often they'll say, oh, lovely. Uh-huh. Right? Because they visited it on a nice sunny day. Right? Everyone's having a good time. There's lots of things going on. But if you live there, then you see the seasons come and go. And it is a beautiful town, right? I'm, you know, I do want to talk it up. It's a really lovely, lovely town. But it does have, like all towns, some deprivation. And it's got a soul, you know? Like, some towns, you just can feel that they've got a soul. And
it's true.
Hastings is also a character. It
doesn't
speak,
it's an old place, right?
I mean,
it's been there for many years.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was built as a Victorian sort of, you know, posh people would go down there to take the air and walk on the promenade.
Oh, wow.
But now it's...
But it's not like city towns like, I mean, beach towns like here where you have sand and beaches and surfing.
No.
In the UK, it's different, right?
It's very different, yeah.
Now, there's more like ships and things like that, boats.
Well, it's a fishing town.
Right.
So Hastings is a town of fishermen, really.
So it's more like our beaches on the East Coast here.
Well, there's no sand, for starters.
right. I mean, the ports or whatever you want to call it, right? But the seaside towns, like you say, like I'm thinking of like up in the Northeast and stuff, you know, where you see it in the movies and stuff. It's also fishing towns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's got that. It's, you know, it's got a very strong working class sort of attitude in the town, which is, as I say, I mean, I you know, growing up there was, you asked me earlier, what was my childhood like?
Right.
It was massively influenced by where I grew up.
Right.
Because it's a big town for, you know, the South Coast. It's a very sprawling town as well. It's very, it's, I mean, I'm in California, right? It's not as sprawling as California.
Yeah.
For England, it's quite sprawling.
No place is as sprawling as LA.
But
we were talking about the distances driving here, you know, and it's unlike any other place, you know. I mean, you know, to digress a little bit, but the traffic here is horrendous, as everybody knows.
Yeah.
But, you know, in many cities, it's similar.
Mm.
There's a lot of traffic there, too, in traffic jams and rush hour in the morning and evening.
Sure.
But the thing here is there's distances, you know.
Mm.
So you're sitting in traffic, but you're sitting in traffic for a long time, you know.
Yeah.
So that's what's different between L.A. and other cities, you know. Because, like, I was in Houston not too long ago. And I also noticed a lot of traffic, right? But still, it's like 15 minutes you get to your destination.
Yeah.
And I was telling Ben that we drive to Huntington Beach almost every week. It's like an hour and a half, you know? In stop-and-go traffic, you know?
Wow.
That's a long time. You know, that's a lot of... You need a lot of patience for that.
You do. I mean, I have to say, I was in Paris recently, and nothing beats Paris at rush hour. It's
really
mad.
So like, the traffic doesn't go anywhere.
I was just crossing town in a cab, and it took me 2.5 hours.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I should have walked.
It's gotten pretty bad, you know. I mean, I'm thinking of all the new cars, because in L.A. we have a car culture here. People love their cars, you know. So some people have more than one car, and or they always get new cars.
Mm.
So you get all these new cars added to the traffic, but not a lot of old cars leaving, because cars last a long time
they do,
now, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, at what point is this going to like be where we can't even move anymore, you know? So it's pretty worrisome, you know. But but going back to Hastings and the sprawling town and everything.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, there's not much of a rush hour in Hastings.
Right,
so
I can imagine.
So you could drive across it in about 10 minutes.
10 minutes, I think.
Oh, wow. That's a dream.
But yeah, I mean, just in terms of like growing up there, it was, you know, it's a very mixed population. I love Hastings and... And I think that as I say, it's a character in the town. I think the main thing for the film, it was we tried to catch what it's like out of season. And it's kind of like, as you can imagine as a child, there's a sort of period of about 4 weeks when everything's open. So you can go to the, you know, roller coaster and the, again, the roller coaster in Hastings, pretty small, right?
Okay.
We were at Universal Studios yesterday. I mean,
you can't compare.
Not really. And then it all shuts down. You know, suddenly, and so there's a real feeling.
Off season,
yeah, and, right. And you know, everything gets gated up.
Right.
So you have this incredibly vibrant town, and then and I think that, you know, for the film, the reason why I think one of the main reasons, one of my best friends I've known since school, probably my best friend, and we definitely are Hastings people, right?
Yeah.
That's one of the things that, you know, we know each other because of that Hastings experience,
right,
of where we went to school and so on. You know, one might say we were survivors of Hastings, right? But also, you know, we thrive. And there's something about those relationships that you forge when you're just kicking about doing nothing, right? So there's different sort of friendships in life. I think that, you know, I've made amazing friends because we share an experience. Mm-hmm. So I've made amazing friends on set, and you know, even here we've met a few people. Made some lovely friends here already in just a few days because we're sharing an experience.
Right.
But I think when you're just kicking about, you know, trying to find things to do, trying to entertain yourself,
right,
sitting on the beach, having those very deep and meaningful conversations as you look out to sea, that's the sort of friendship that our two main characters have, I think.
I see. Okay.
Especially for our generation, obviously, because like when we were growing up, obviously there's no phones or anything. So I think when you've just hung around and actually just been bored with people, that is deeply bonding for some reason, isn't it? It's just like when you're just trying to think of stuff to do and, you just have those really deep conversations. And
yeah, because that's pretty much all you have is to socialize with other people.
That's right,
And
being bored is underrated, right? Everyone's into mindfulness now, right?
But,
you know, when I was growing up, mindfulness was just being on a bus and looking at the rain dripping down the window, right? Mindfulness was, you know, after all of the children's TV programs had stopped in the summer, just sort of wondering what to do, you know, with myself.
Yeah.
And I think you do. And then when you're with other people, so yeah, absolutely, your entertainment is other people.
Right.
And if you spend lots of time with another person, you do get into deep conversations.
That's true.
And I think there's also, Amelia was saying to someone at the festival, I think you said it was like those friendships that are the people who know the very core of your being.
Yeah, totally. I have a really solid group of friends that I went to school with.
You're very fortunate.
I think if you really know someone at that age, at like, you know, 14, 15, you know their soul, don't you?
Yeah.
And you know them forever. Like, they're never going to not be that person.
That's
no matter
true.
What they go on and do and whatever. Like, you.
Because at that age, you still don't have inhibitions and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, you don't learn.
You're just totally yourself.
Right, exactly. Wow.
I mean, I think I had a few inhibitions in my teenage years.
Yeah,
I've got to be honest. But,
but not like when you're an adult and you hide everything.
I'd like to say I was a very well-adjusted teenager, but anyone who knew me would know that I wasn't.
Well, teenage years, you know. But also, you know, I mean, teenage years are really important, you know, for development. Like, for example, I noticed that most people's favorite music is from their teens, you know. It becomes like the soundtrack for your life, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And that's what I find, at least with me and people that I know, you know, everybody picks up the music that they learn early on when they become perceptive to music, you know.
That's right.
So true,
at like 13, 14, you know, you start really getting into the music, and that's what you remember.
It totally is. It was actually a study came out recently, a neuroscience.
Okay.
And apparently we, at the age of 35, it turns out, they worked out, we become less receptive to new music specifically, because
we're
so in tune with music,
right?
But So that's why, you know, at age 35, what is this noise?
Exactly. You know,
it's terrible.
Exactly. There's a new generation. They
that's
come
right.
up with
exactly.
something.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. So they're, and it's brilliant, you know, but it's quite nice to for a neuroscientist to say that it's biological. It's not just me being an old fart.
Right. No, that's true, yeah. But it's clear. I think every generation, you know, the adults look at the kids, and what kind of music is that?
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
remember, even with the Beatles and all that stuff, the reaction was the same from the adults, you know.
Yeah.
So music is definitely for the young, I think.
Yeah.
Well, I think we can, but I think the other thing about music, because is that it transports you back, doesn't it?
Of course.
Right. It's a, it's again. There's sort of music. Music and smells, I think, are the things
exactly.
that take you back. So to be able to, you know, the film's got quite a lot of nostalgia in it. I think you're probably picking that up.
Right.
Fortunately, we couldn't afford, you know, music, but we do have an amazing score by a guy called Richie Johnson.
Oh, wonderful.
Who, he composed it all for us.
Uh-huh.
And he's managed to do something with the music, which is really special as well.
Right.
I mean, this is a film about the talent we managed to flukily get together in the short period of time that we were able to film. Richie's music is haunting and incredibly beautiful. It's a cello and a little bit of electric guitar in the mix and some violin, and partly improvised around his score as well. And it's... I'm not a musician, but you know when you hear something. I said to him, you know, the biggest compliment I can give you is that if I listen to the music on Spotify, it's just beautiful classical music.
Yeah.
When I watch the film, I don't notice the music at
right.
all.
Right, but it's there.
But it's there,
and it adds to the mood and everything.
Yeah, because that's the real talent. Like if you can watch a film and not notice the music, but have that again just move you, then I think that we're so lucky with the talent we had.
Amazing Now so it's not a huge cast, right? Is it only the two people?
Yeah, it's just a two-hander with the two actors.
And Daisy is
the voiceover. Yeah.
Oh, okay, right. Yeah. And how long did it take to make the film from beginning to end?
Oh God, I don't know.
Let's say it was written already from that point on. What, several months or years?
I mean,
not that long.
No.
Months?
Yeah. So we did. I think again, it's the reason for making the film for us, partly because we love films, but also it was an opportunity to learn some new stuff.
Right.
So the team, we did how many days? 5 days filming, I think, in Hastings on location.
Oh, okay.
And then. 1 day filming in Margate because we couldn't get permission to film in an arcade in Hastings. Long story.
Uh-huh.
that's the producer's job to work that out. But
then we got to go to Dreamland and have the whole park to
ourselves,
which was amazing.
There you go.
Yeah.
Where
did
you find that arcade? Where was it?
In Margate, Margate's in Kent. It was actually due to the real grit of our producer Ruth. She phoned every arcade I think in the country.
So tough.
And we didn't know it was going to be hard, but it's to do with gambling laws.
Yeah.
Right.
So they were very, very cautious about anybody filming anything.
Right.
You can't be seen to promote gambling in the UK.
Very
difficult.
Right. But did the arcade also have to look old? Was that like from their childhood or...
Yeah, I mean, all arcades look old in the UK.
Yeah.
Like they're very old machines. You know, very tight. That was not a problem.
Yeah, here you have like spaceships in there.
It's not Las Vegas.
No.
Wow, amazing. So the film is Shouting at the Sea. Have you been to previous festivals before this one?
No, this is our first one, and I've got to give a massive shout out to Holly Shorts. I mean, it's been such a brilliant, overwhelming festival.
Really?
Oh,
so
wow.
You've been watching other people's films as
well?
Well,
you know what? Right, we have, obviously. But there's, I think they're playing about 400 films, so we can't watch them
all.
Wow.
That's a lot.
But it's just, they've created an environment for filmmakers.
Right.
And we're in LA, right? We're in Hollywood. So they've just done such a brilliant job. They found excellent industry people to give really honest, straightforward panel talks. I mean, I'm learning so much. But also, they've set it up so that it's very, very easy to network. So we've just met, we've met some phenomenal film
amazing people.
Yeah. Oh, wow. And some of the films playing are just, I mean,
the standard is so
inspiring.
High. It's
right?
Really mind-blowing. Yeah.
Does it make you feel like insecure when you watch other films?
Do you know what? It does. it does. It both does. And it, but it's also, well, it's like you know, what an honor to be amongst, amongst
but
such other
talent. But it's
normal,
you know. I mean, it's like you make your film and it's like that's all in your head and you go, wow, this is a masterpiece. And then you go and you see there's other masterpieces.
Yeah.
And you go, well, how am I going to stand out, you know? But the point is people do stand out. Films do stand out. And, you know, they reach as far as the Oscars, you know? And I've said this before that your publicist, Catherine, has been involved with several movies that went to the Oscars.
Yeah.
So you guys are in good company, you know?
And also, Catherine, I mean, Catherine has made this trip such a brilliant trip for us.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
she's amazing.
Oh, she's like, cannot thank her enough. She's such a, well, you know her well, right? She's she's a really warm person, first of all.
And she loves her work, and she's very good at it.
And she just, but she also knows everybody,
I mean, you better when you're a publicist, you know, but not everybody manages, you know.
No, no, she's been brilliant. And her team, all of the team at London Flair, I mean, they, we're so lucky to have them.
How did you get in touch with her? How did you find her?
So I did a bit of research. Oscar-winning films, obviously, you know, aim high. And there's a film that won the Oscar a couple of years ago called An Irish Goodbye, which I loved. I mean, it's a brilliant, brilliant film. So I was thinking, well, if we're aiming for that, you know, if we're aiming for that sort of quality of film, that sort of quality of storytelling, let's just deep dive, let's look at their press kit, let's look at all of the stuff that they were doing. And then I just saw this, it just said press inquiries, Catherine at London Flair, and I was like, I'll just drop her a line, like, what, you know, if you don't ask, you don't get.
That's true.
And she got back to us, she loved the film. You know, and again, that's it's intimidating to know that she's representing, you know, all the films that she represents are really top quality. But to be in that class, effectively, is great. And what's so, you know, wonderful is that Catherine gives us, it feels like one-to-one attention, right? And she's got four films here, I think. So she's obviously giving everyone else one-to-one attention as well. But, you know, takes real talent to make you feel, you know, the center of attention.
You're the only one.
Yeah, that's right,
That's true. Wow, very nice. Well, so the film is Shouting at the Sea. Can people can see it if they go to Holly Shorts, right?
Yeah, so it's playing as part of the Touch of Romance program on Friday. And that starts at 7:30.
So this is this Friday.
This Friday.
And that's where, the Chinese Theater?
That's right. It's in Auditorium 6 in the Chinese Theater.
Okay, cool. So there's a lot of people that love festivals and they go and see a lot of movies. So yours is going to, you don't know what time exactly, but it starts at 7:30.
So each block of films, they have a, I think we're on the second. I imagine that will probably be about 8:15.
Right.
But that's a guess, just based on what we've seen with the other programs.
Right.
But there's a block. But, I mean, you know, the wonderful thing about short films is that you can go and see eight films and like, have eight different experiences. You know, I'm I love films. So we were watching the horror. When we first arrived, we watched the horror program. And, you know, and it's just fantastic to see how inventive everybody was. There was an absolutely brilliant film, which I want to recommend another film, called Room Tone.
Oh, so good.
Oh, it was perfect. So perfect. It was like some of these films, you just like, wow, you know, they're just pitch perfect. It was a slasher film set on a film set. And that was brilliant. And then I've also recently seen another film which I just think deserves so much.
Awesome. But you're looking forward to yours and to see the audience's reaction, I'm sure.
Yeah.
That's the biggest part of it all.
Oh, wow. I mean, you know, nothing beats, absolutely nothing beats sitting in an auditorium,
right,
seeing your work on the big screen, right, and just hearing people respond to the story in real time, because no one knows the story, right?
Exactly.
So you're getting to sense the emotional journey that people are on. Yeah. Are people going to laugh at the points where they're supposed to lie?
Right.
Are people going to be moved and so on? And it's, I mean, we've had one screening, which was just for cast and crew in London. What did you think of it? Because I was overwhelmed. It was fun, wasn't it?
It was amazing. And, you know, it's a really magical, moving film. Mm. You know, it really does. I think it really hits home to people because everyone's had one of those really deep friendships that, you know, you don't see them for ages. You come back together. It's a bit awkward to begin with, but you know them. You know the bones of them.
Right.
And I think, you know, when you've had that solid time of being really silly with someone,
yes,
and also, you know, really earnest and deep,
yes,
like you never can come back from that. Like you just, you're always going to have that connection. And, you know, it works. It's a beautiful looking film as well. I just wanted to shout out for the cinematographer, Tom Hooker.
Yeah.
It's so atmospheric of the town. You know, we have terrible weather in the UK, right?
No.
Off-season seaside towns are grey, but there's something so sad, melancholy about them, isn't there?
Yeah.
And it all just adds to the atmosphere. You've got the kind of grey skies, but then the bright lights and the, you know, it's just a beautiful colour palette. Yeah. You've got the arcade. It all just comes together. And the shots of the sea are phenomenal. Oh, and with the music and the poetry, it's just a really magic, really moving movie.
Well, I'm looking forward to watching it. I have a link here.
Yeah,
I'm going to watch it now that we talked about it. I'm really curious because I'm picturing it all in my head.
Yeah.
But I know what you mean about, you know, meeting or seeing old friends and stuff, you know, because when I was young, we moved a lot, you know, we moved around a lot. So I would always go back to where I used to live or go to school and see my old friends, you know?
Yeah.
And it was the best thing, you know?
Yeah.
And then I moved here and I haven't seen my friends in like 45 years, you know?
Wow,
so it would be nice to
well, you
to
must.
Go back.
We're inspiring you. Go back and reconnect.
Yeah, there you go.
Must do that.
I gotta do it.
Yeah. Get them to come here. Like, how what a beautiful radio program that would be if you had your reunion live on air. I mean,
that's
that would be
true,
amazing.
Yeah. It's quite a flight, though, from Israel. But, yeah, you know, but it's up to me to go back. Because, you know, what I realize is that when you leave, the people you leave behind, they don't think about you as much as you think about them. Because for you, it's like, this is your past, you know, this is everything.
Yeah.
And for them, it's just, you're just one person out of everything else. You know?
Well, you know what? Like, one of the things that we talked about a lot when we were writing the film was that you just don't know the impact you have on other people, right? So it might, that you might be surprised. You
That's
might
true.
Be, you know, you might, there might have been something that you did.
Right.
Way back when,
right,
that inspired
something you said,
someone.
It's not like a throwaway comment or something.
Yeah.
Has always rung in someone's head and you don't know about it.
That's true. Yeah. No, that's true. Well, Ben and Amelia, thank you so much for joining us. Tell people how they can find out more about the film, about you.
Sure. So the best way to look us up is probably on Instagram. We're at Shouting at the Sea. We've got a website as well, which is shoutingatthesea.com.
Okay.
From there, you can find links to Toffee Ham and so on. But I have to also shout out to Amelia quickly. Her website with her phenomenal sculptures is ameliarowcroft.com. And sculptingmasterclass.com is where you can find her courses.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing your work. It's amazing. It sounds amazing, you know?
Cool.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I wish you all the luck.
Thank you.
I hope to see you at the Oscars. Standing on the stage and thanking everybody. And don't forget us minions when you become big stars.
Hey, no, thank you so much. What a brilliant, brilliant interview you are. It's so nice just to have a chat. It's, it's lovely.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Of course. Everybody, check out the movie. And thank you for listening. We'll see you all tomorrow.
Listening to Sam in the Morning, only on LA Talk Radio.